It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Wisconsin faces a shortage of nurses. We'll find out how we got here and look at some ideas for turning things around. First, student loan repayments have been on pause for a couple years now because of the pandemic. Now the Biden administration has signaled that it may extend that pause, which was set to expire in May. White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain also said that President Biden will decide whether to forgive some student loan debt before that freeze is lifted. Here's Klain on the show Pod Save America.
The president's going to look at what we should do on student debt before the pause expires, or he'll extend the pause. And so the question whether or not there's some executive action student debt forgiveness when the payments resume is a decision we're going to take before the payments resume.
We're talking now about student loan debt and the possible continuation of the repayment moratorium. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this you? Have your student loan repayments been on hold for a while? Do you want to see that continue, or do you think it's time to get back to normal on that? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Travis Hornsby is a chartered financial analyst and founder of StudentLoanPlanner.com. He hosts the Student Loan Planner podcast. Travis, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
So for people who have their student loan payments frozen right now, that might end in May. It might not. What should they be doing right now?
We don't think it's going to end in May. We think they will probably extend it. In terms of what people should do, it's been a long time since you've heard from your student loan company, right? So what we would recommend is to try to go into your servicer's website and update your contact information. You can also do that at studentaid.gov. Just make sure that when the payment pause inevitably does end, that you have everything on file so that somebody can reach you and let you know about the details for whatever that will be.
Did people have the option of continuing payments to try to tuck away at the principal there?
Yeah, you certainly do during this pause, and a lot of people have done that. But in many cases, it's a mistake. And the reason for that is because some people go for student loan forgiveness programs. And if you're making any payments during this period that we've had the pause in place for the past 2 years, if you're going for student loan forgiveness, then those payments are wasted. And one thing that people aren't aware of is you can actually request a retroactive refund going back to the beginning of the pause, March 13th of 2020, and get all that money back if you mistakenly paid when you didn't need to. Of course, some people that do want to pay off their debts in full are continuing to make payments. And with the interest being paused, all that's going towards what people owe, which is a very welcome thing. But I think it will unfortunately end. But it's going to, I think, last a little bit longer than May.
Now, this freeze started during the earlier days of the pandemic under the Trump administration. The pandemic isn't over, but the damage to the economy that it was doing earlier on does seem to have faded. Can you talk about why the freeze on student loan repayments is still going on?
At this point, it's really a question of politics. So earlier on in the pandemic, everyone sort of was on the same page that we needed to do as much as possible to stimulate consumer demand. And the current administration actually did say repeatedly that the January 31st date for the end of the student loan pause would be the final extension of the pause. But what's really important to know is that coincided with two things: Omicron variant and Build Back Better not passing. And there was an overwhelming pressure campaign from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party to extend that to, I think that many have wanted extended it longer than May. The administration said that they would do it for an additional 90 days. But the problem we're running up against now is the midterm season is fast approaching. And for very obvious reasons, the party in power does not want to turn on student loan repayments for millions of borrowers going into a midterm election year. So there's some people, we would probably be among them, saying that we expect that that pause might get extended until right past the midterms to avoid political damage.
Another question all along has been not just delaying payments due, but forgiving some level of student loan debt. And the amount, depending on who's calling for it, varies from all of it everywhere to targeted amounts for people in particular need. What's the latest conversation on forgiving some student loan right now?
So the key thing to know is the authority for pausing all payments and interest is derived from the HEROES Act of 2003. And that says that you can do things during a national emergency so that borrowers are no worse off. But the interpretation has sort of been that you can't make borrowers way better off. In other words, that act doesn't possibly give the president the authority to cancel student loan debt, but merely to put things on pause. And there was a memo about a year ago the Department of Education was asked to provide about the president's authority to cancel student loan debt. So for progressives on the left, they are very adamant that the president does have this authority. And so they asked for this memo from the Department of Education. That memo has been produced but heavily redacted. In other words, the White House refuses to say what its Department of Education thinks about what the president's authority to cancel student loan debt really is. And so everyone's in this sort of limbo where no one wants to turn student loan payments on to be blamed for that. And for whatever reason, they do not want to release the authority that they have based off of this memo to cancel student loan debt or not. So we're really sort of in this waiting game. What I kind of expect the outcome to be is that the party in power will continue the pause past the midterms to avoid being blamed for it, and will try to avoid the question of student debt cancellation, because I think what's the only, you know, reason that I can think of why they wouldn't publish that memo is that the memo told them something they didn't want to hear, which is to say that the president does not have the authority to cancel student loan debt via executive order.
Talking to Travis Hornsby from studentloanplanner.com, looking at a likely extension of a moratorium on student loan payments, the possibility of partial or total student loan debt cancellation. You can join in with your thoughts or questions about either of those at 800-642-1234. Let's bring out a caller now. Murta is with us in Madison. Murta, hi.
Hi. I'm very excited about the freeze of student loan debt. I am a registered nurse. I work for a public health department in our town. And I owe money for my college degree in nursing, and I'm really excited, and I hope at one point in this world we would be able to look at eliminating and forgiving student loans for African Americans who are at least healthcare professionals, especially in light of the post-pandemic or the pandemic, the endemic that we're still in. Because we work super hard and we are committed, but many times working for the government, it isn't super, super great, 100% great pay. So paying back student loans, especially with children and that kind of thing, becomes, you know, very difficult. So that's my thought on the issue. I'm very excited about the potential extension of the freeze on student loans.
Murta, thanks for the call. Travis, first of all, the idea of targeting some forgiveness to particular communities, whether low income or, as Murta mentions, by race, African Americans hard hit by the pandemic. Before we get into healthcare professionals in particular, are those ideas that are out there?
Right. I mean, one thing that I wanted to say that's even more exciting than the prospect of a potential extension on the student loan pause is, because Murta mentioned she was a registered nurse, that everyone needs to know about the public service waiver program that's enacted right now that the Biden administration is doing. So many people might have heard about public service loan forgiveness. It's this program that infamously has had a lot of problems with the approval rate for people that are applying and get denied. So during the pandemic, with all these emergency authorities the president has over student loan debt, the Biden administration has waived most of the requirements for the PSLF program that normally exist, which means that, say, Murta had been a registered nurse for, let's just say, 15 years and had been making payments, but maybe she had the wrong kind of loans. Well, you can now consolidate those loans with the Department of Education and then apply at studentaid.gov/PSLF after that consolidation and potentially get all 10 years that you need for complete loan forgiveness on your loans applied to loans that previously didn't even qualify. And the deadline for that PSLF waiver program is October 31st of 2022. So, you know, that's something that could result in a whole lot of nonprofit or government full-time employees' loans being either a lot more close to being forgiven or being immediately and completely forgiven. So we're seeing a huge number of people coming through our site right now for that opportunity. As to the question about should there be targeted forgiveness more specifically, I think yes. The problem with the PSLF, with the extension of the student loan pause is that it isn't targeted at all, right? It's a one-size-fits-all program, which means that, African-American nurse who's been working really hard during the pandemic but has a lot of student loan debt might be getting a lot less benefits than an orthopedic surgeon who has a lot more debt and therefore gets a lot more interest subsidized during this pause. So I would certainly think that it would be a great thing to target the forgiveness for those who need it most, be it on income level or people that are in default, or if you want to look at different demographic groups. And that's I think, one of the big missed opportunities of this student loan pause extension, that the relief is not more targeted.
Thanks for that call, Murda. We're talking about the possible extension of the pandemic freeze on student loan payments. Travis Hornsby stays with us, chartered financial analyst, founder of studentloanplanner.com. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you benefiting from this current freeze on student loan payments? Do you want to see that extended? Or whether you have loans or not, do you think it's time to end that waiver? And how about the idea of forgiving student loans for some particular people, for everybody, some point in between? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Travis Hornsby, chartered financial analyst, founder of studentloanplanner.com. The Biden administration is likely to extend the moratorium on student loan payments again. Currently, that moratorium expires in May. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions. Renata joins us now in Lake Mills. Renata, hi.
Good afternoon. My question has to do with the moratorium and how it applies to private student loans, which seems to be going under the radar. Many private student loan companies are still requiring payments. The interest keeps accruing. Yet these private student loan companies are protected by the federal government, and these loans need to be recategorized back what they is not in the student loan category. And I would like to hear the guests' comments on that, and I'll take my comments off the air.
Renata, thanks for the call. Travis, private student loans.
Well, there's really two kinds of private student loans, really. There's the kind that is definitely 100% private, and then there's the kind that's offered from the FFEL program, the FFEL loan program. So for those that don't know, the FFEL loan program, this is mostly loans that were taken out before 2010. A lot of times these loans are owned by a commercial entity, but they're guaranteed by the government. And so there are sometimes ways that you can consolidate these older loans into a direct loan with the government and get the benefit of that 0% interest and the forgiveness options. A lot of people aren't aware of that, that's an option. So that's one point. Is a whole lot of people out there that are being charged for their loans might actually be able to get that 0% interest by consolidating at studentaid.gov. The point about the private loans that are, you know, definitely not guaranteed by the government, that are not on that program, unfortunately, you know, there's nothing that can be done in the short run. So if you have a private student loan, what we would suggest is try to apply for a lower interest rate. So, for example, a whole lot of people have interest rates that are above 3% on their private loans. And that's one thing that studentloanplanner.com does, is we help identify for people that have private loans, can you qualify for a lower interest rate, possibly get a lower monthly payment as well. So while I sympathize that, you know, for whatever reason that those loans were left out of the conversation, there are some relief options available by potentially looking for lower interest rates or consolidating them if they're actually guaranteed by the government.
Thanks for that call, Renata. Jeremy joins us next in Milwaukee. Jeremy, hi.
How are you?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Jeremy?
Well, I'm just thinking, like, I mean, I went to school 15 years ago. At the age of 24 years old, I decided to go to college, went to a university, and spent $75,000 in loans because I didn't have the money saved in my bank account to go to college, but I knew I wanted to go. So I took those loans out, $75,000 later, graduated, and over the course of 12 years, slowly but surely, using just logic and self-discipline, budgeting, I paid my loans off. And I feel like nowadays, everybody's looking for free money, free this, free that. And it's just killing our economy. It's killing our nation. And
Jeremy. We don't have too much time left, but this is a lot of people think, Travis, hey, either I paid my loans off or I didn't go to college. I didn't take loans at all. So why should this one group of people get this benefit that isn't applying to everybody else?
Well, luckily, I'm not a politician, so I would urge everyone, for every different opinion that people have on student loan debt, to contact their representatives, contact their legislators, contact their representatives, senators, et cetera, to make their views known. That's the point of a democracy, right? I would say, in terms of the caller's point, you know, it is true that the, you know, student loans are disproportionately held by people that have higher incomes than average. It's true. And, you know, economists would call this sort of policy regressive, meaning that it's, you know, disproportionately benefits higher income borrowers. It's also true that there's a lot of student loan borrowers really struggling that are working single parents, that this would be absolutely life-changing to receive some level of relief. What we tell people is, you know, you can control what you can control. And at the end of the day, there's a lot of loopholes, a lot of tricks and tools that you can utilize to pay your debt off or go for forgiveness if that's a better choice for you individually. So just as we, you know, say that, you know, Social Security and Medicare, it doesn't really matter what your view is on it. If it doesn't get changed, you might as well claim the benefits that you are being offered because you're paying taxes for it anyway. So that's sort of our approach to things. And, you know, I would encourage people to pay their debt back faster than 12 years if that's the path that makes sense for them. And some of this, you know, tools you can do, like, you're refinancing it to a lower interest rate, you know, maybe trying to take bonuses and throwing it at your loans and different strategies like that. So I understand where the caller is coming from and just hope everybody reaches out to the representatives to share their views.
Jeremy, thanks for sharing your story. In just our last minute, Travis, what are you watching for next on student loan debt and the federal government?
I think you're going to see a lot more headlines about this PSLF waiver for public servants specifically. About 100,000 people have been approved for this so far. I expect as many as maybe 5 to 10 million borrowers could potentially benefit from this public service loan forgiveness waiver. So if you are a nonprofit or a government employee listening to this, please Google the PSLF waiver. Check out studentaid.gov. You can check out studentloanplanner.com and see if you potentially qualify for this, because it's truly a life-changing thing that expires because of the temporary authority from the pandemic, October 31st of 2022. And finally, with the student loan pause, I expect we will hear something, if not this week, then next week when the president gets back from his overseas trip.
Travis, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Great to be here.
Travis Hornsby is a chartered financial analyst and the founder of StudentLoanPlanner.com. He talked to us about whether we'll see student loan forgiveness under President Biden as the freeze on payments, as we just heard, may soon be extended. Milwaukee residents will have a chance to participate in a historic mayoral election on April 5th. There's no incumbent on that ballot for the first time since 2004. Bob Donovan, a self-described conservative who served for years as a common council member, is facing acting Mayor Cavalier Johnson. If Johnson wins, he would be the city's first elected black mayor. Corrine Hess has more.
Johnson and Donovan were the top vote-getters in a seven-way February primary. Johnson came out on top with nearly 42% of the vote. Donovan got 22%. Only about a quarter of registered voters went to the polls in February, and now, in the weeks leading up to the general election, enthusiasm for the race hasn't seemed to increase. At the Blue Kangaroo Laundromat on Milwaukee's south side, most of the customers are unaware there is a mayor's race going on. For those who did know, many like Celio Palacio say the outcome doesn't matter much.
And I always like to read the platform of each one of the candidates. And most of the times, it just doesn't work.
Blue Kangaroo is in Bob Donovan's district, but Cavalier Johnson got 44% here, compared to Donovan's 39%. John Johnson is a research fellow at Marquette University Law School who has watched the race closely. He says despite the serious challenges the city is facing, he isn't expecting a high turnout on April 5th. The mayoral election will be the only thing on the April ballot in most parts of Milwaukee.
Turnout goes up quite a lot in the general election for mayor, but that also coincides with the presidential preference vote and often contested statewide elections for Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Donovan has made crime his number one priority in the race. He's calling for more police officers and tougher penalties for criminals.
We have individuals in Milwaukee who behave badly, who behave in criminal ways, that are getting away with it because they feel there are no consequences for their actions.
Kevler Johnson wants to bring back about 200 police officers that were cut in previous city budgets. Both candidates' call for more cops hasn't resonated with everyone. For the first time since its inception, political advocacy group Black Leaders Organizing Communities isn't endorsing a candidate. The group's political director, Kyle Johnson, says neither contender is good for Black people.
We know after 2020, after however many past years, we know cops in the Black community, the way the current system is set up, it's not working.
Kevler Johnson says he understands where the group is coming from, but residents want police protection. Still, he says police are only part of the solution to the city's public safety problems.
And so when I talk about public safety, I talk about it in a holistic way that includes police, yes, but it also includes positive reforms to the department. It also includes prevention. It also includes mental health.
Back at the Blue Kangaroo, Carla Fiera is looking for stabilization in her neighborhood. She has worked at the laundromat for 3 years and lives nearby.
I have been seeing too much difference between, you know, other neighborhoods than here in this community. It needs a lot of help.
The business community feels the same. Tim Sheehy heads the Milwaukee Chamber. He says people across the city want the same things: safety, prosperity, and educational opportunities.
And I think that fundamentally covers every resident in the city of Milwaukee, whether they're here doing business, whether they're playing, whether they're living here, or whether they're passing through.
Sheehy says the election of a new mayor is exciting because it doesn't happen very often in Milwaukee. In the last 60 years, there have been 4 mayors. No matter how it turns out, it's a chance to look at the city's challenges in a new way. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up after the news, Wisconsin's nursing shortage isn't new, but the pandemic made it worse. We'll find out how bad it's gotten and what healthcare providers are trying to do about it. You can share your story right now. Email ideas@WPR.org, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we learn how to see the Northern Lights without traveling to the North Pole. Now, the Wisconsin Hospital Association put out its annual healthcare workforce report, which showed, quote, unprecedented, end quote, rates of turnover and workers leaving the industry. The biggest shortage has been among nurses and certified nursing assistants. The report found that COVID-19 made the issue worse, but not all of the problems facing nurses can be blamed on the pandemic. We're learning more about the impact of the shortage and possible ways to reduce it. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a nurse or other healthcare worker? What are you seeing where you work? Have you left the healthcare field yourself recently, or maybe switched jobs, switched kinds of jobs? What led that to happen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jennifer Deering is the Associate Dean for Academic Affairs and an Associate Professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's College of Nursing. Jennifer, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
I know I've had conversations on this show pre-pandemic about an upcoming shortage of nurses. What were things like? What were some of the biggest worries before we'd even heard of COVID-19?
The silver tsunami. So it was mentioned in the report where we have a huge number of nurses who are going to retire in the coming years because they're part of the generation that is turning 65 in greater numbers compared to the rest of the population. That's a huge thing we've been facing in recent years and working to manage, and the COVID pandemic has accelerated that.
Yeah, again, before we get to COVID, a bunch of people are aging out, retiring. No problem. We'll bring in all sorts of new nurses, right? What? Why hasn't that number been keeping up?
Yeah, it sounds simple. It's a little more complex than that.
Sure.
So our students learn in clinical agencies. They learn where people get healthcare. And there are a limited number of spots where all approximately 41 nursing schools can learn across the state. We were recently turned away from a unit because they just had too many new nurses who were learning and they couldn't provide a safe environment for both their new nurses and our students, as an example. So being able to educate nurses and have enough spots is kind of the main thing that keeps us from being able to open our doors to more nurses, in addition to the faculty shortage.
Okay, so this problem was here in many ways before COVID-19. As you mentioned just a few moments ago, this made things worse. What kind of things did we see when it came to people leaving the profession and maybe not being replaced?
In the pandemic, we've seen rates of depression, post-traumatic stress, and other mental health conditions just skyrocket in our nurses. We have new studies out that show the rates of these challenges to nurses are really high, and our nurses are really hurting. And so as a result, they're asking questions like, is it worth it to stay here? Is it worth it to keep doing this day in and day out? And maybe it might be better somewhere else.
Are we seeing nurses at, you know, who might have retired in 5 years or 10 years? Maybe there's a chance that they're going to stick around. Has COVID-19 changed the equation for them in particular, saying, hey, maybe now's the time to retire?
Yeah, I think it did. I think what we saw in the beginning is we saw people coming out of retirement and helping out, saying, oh, well, I can do something about this, and putting their own lives at risk to help the public and to help us get through this. But now that a couple more years have gone by, they're really ready to retire. And so there's about 1,200 educators in schools of nursing. And in the next 10 years, it's estimated that 58% of them are going to retire. So we have a huge gap facing us to be able to educate nurses.
We heard on that theme on the Ideas Network Facebook page, Mary writes, I'm one of them, the nurses we're talking about. Mary says, retired at 62, still able to practice, but enough is enough. And Catherine responds, no surprise, they've been pushed past the limit. Can you talk about, I mean, even without a pandemic, everyone I've ever talked to in nursing, it's a tough job. There are long shifts, heavy workloads, and COVID obviously made those things worse, right?
It sure did.
Yeah. So are there things that hospitals, other providers are doing to try to tackle that issue?
Yeah, there are a number of strategies. Some of them are listed in that report. And one of the things we're trying to do and hospitals need to do is to have safer staffing ratios. Nurses give better care when they can monitor their patients and watch for deterioration. And so safe staffing levels help nurses give the best care that they can and not feel distressed over giving inferior care. So that's one thing. Another thing is not doing mandatory overtime. So giving nurses the rest that they need in order to recover, time to spend with their families, to balance their lives is so critical and important. And these are just a few of many strategies.
Talking to Jennifer Deering, Associate Dean for Academic Affairs and Associate Professor at the UW-Milwaukee College of Nursing, looking at a nurse shortage in the state. It was already on the way. COVID made it worse, according to a new report. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you work in healthcare, especially if you're a nurse yourself, what are you seeing on your shifts? Were you led to retire early, or did you change your job within or beyond the healthcare profession? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Jennifer, the nursing pipeline, bringing new nurses into the profession, you mentioned not enough training positions for them. Do you see solutions out there?
Absolutely. So given that I said that the nursing shortage is fundamentally a faculty shortage, we have to bring more nurses along to educate those nurses. There's about 90,000 nurses in Wisconsin. 1,200 of those are the educators. And so you need a minimum of a master's degree in nursing to educate nurses. And so that's one of the strategies is opening up more Masters of Nursing Education programs so that we can at least have qualified nurses in those hospitals teaching students in clinical settings.
How about on the supply side? Are we seeing a lot of people going into nursing, or have those numbers gone down, especially seeing what nurses are going through right now?
Yeah, you know, we've seen it change. We sort of expected an uptick to take place when the pandemic happened. We're celebrating nurses. They're our heroes, all of that. And then now we're seeing a decrease. I think part of it is that there's a lot of malice that's given to healthcare workers. And one of the things the report mentions is the intentional violence mm-hmm. that nurses face in their workplaces. This is hard to take. It's hard to take abuse, verbal or physical, and building that resilience. It is a tough profession. It's physically stressful. It's mentally stressful. And so you have to be a really strong person and have a lot of resilience to become a nurse and to be a nurse and be healthy and happy in the profession.
Have you heard from nurses out in the field that issue, it existed before COVID, violence against healthcare workers during COVID? I mean, there's been conspiracy theories, a lot of things targeting the healthcare profession. Have things gotten worse?
I think in the pandemic, things have gotten worse. I heard a story from one of my colleagues who was taking care of an older lady who had to go on a ventilator and was going to die. And even at the end, she did not believe COVID was real. To have to help families through that dying process when they're facing such stress and such hysteria in the face of already what is a traumatic pandemic just adds to layers of trauma. Nurses are facing moral injury in their care of patients, and we really have to put things in place to help them through this, help them process the trauma that they've been through so that they will stay in the profession and will still give good quality care to all of our loved ones.
Are there changes we can make to keep nurses safer and, I don't know how you cut down on the abuse they receive? I mean, yes, if they could be more resilient, great, but it'd be great to have them not have to be resilient in the first place.
It's true. There are a lot of things that are taking place in hospitals, but nurses need to be at the table to help make the decisions for what works as well. So it is a tough issue, and I'm skirting the issue because a lot of it is context dependent. Mm-hmm. It's dependent on when you work in the emergency room, it's very different than when you work with sedated patients in terms of the level of violence. So there may not be a one size fit all solution to reducing violence, but safe stashing ratios, having appropriate security, having good communication and trust within your team to be able to manage issues, to be able to call on someone and say, I need some help in here. These are all really fundamental to staying safe when you're working with your patients.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Barbie is with us in Washburn. Barbie, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Barbie?
Well, I just wanted to add that nursing isn't always what you think it is. There's other things involved, like there's nurses involved in the nursing homes, not just what you think nurses are. And I need desperately to get into a home, and I can't get into one because of the nursing shortage.
Oh, Barbie, thank you so much for sharing that story. And at best to you, I hope you can find a home that you can get into. But I think nurse, to be fair, Jennifer, I think hospital or doctor's office. Barbie brings up a whole nother setting that she says is being affected by the nursing shortage. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. Barbie, I'm sorry. And thank you for your call. It's a really great point that you're making, that the focus is not just on hospitals. It is the long-term care industry, where a lot of people go after the hospital who can't quite go back home just yet. A lot of people go to rehab and long-term care to finish their recoveries. And that industry is hurting even more. I just heard last week from a chief nursing officer at a long-term care facility say, you know, I've lost nurses for $100 an hour because I in a long-term care facility just can't afford to pay nurses. So there is this, there's a sort of wave going on of turnover that is incentivized with money, but who ends up getting hurt in the end is patients. When there aren't adequate staffing levels to be able to take care of the patients who are in long-term care facilities and to be able to invite those who need that care, like Barbie, into the facility. Can I add one more thing?
Sure, yeah.
Certified nursing assistants mm-hmm. right now, they're making good money, but there's a massive shortage for nursing assistants. And so there have been strategies to be able to educate and increase the numbers of certified nursing assistants rapidly, but there still is just a huge gap. It is a place where a nursing assistant and a nurse work very closely together, and right now we have a shortage of both.
Barbie, thanks again for sharing your story. We're talking about a shortage of nurses in Wisconsin. UW-Milwaukee nursing professor Jennifer Deering stays with us, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you felt the impact of the nursing shortage? Have you experienced longer waits at a hospital or clinic? Are you, like Barbie, you or someone in your family can't get into a longer-term care facility because there aren't enough nurses to work there? If you work in healthcare, what are you seeing at your facility? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with UW-Milwaukee nursing professor Jennifer Deering with us today, looking at a nursing shortage in Wisconsin and some potential solutions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts on what's driving this shortage of nurses? Have you experienced it as a patient or if you work as a provider? Are you a nurse who has retired or switched jobs within or beyond the healthcare profession? Let us know. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Jennifer, do we need to change any, one of the things mentioned in this hospital association report, do we need to change regulations when it comes to training, bringing in nurses? Are there things that we could do to get, I don't know, red tape out of the way to make the process work more smoothly?
Yes. I mean, the report really mentions how regulations are one of those things that keep healthcare providers from being able to spend the time with their patients that they need to. So it's a yes and. We need regulations that help protect nurses so nurses can feel that they can leave the unit, take a lunch break, actually go to the bathroom, and come back and know their patients were cared for appropriately and aren't skipping. That can be done with regulations. It can also be done with good leadership. It can be done with good institutional practices for recruitment and retention of nurses as well. But at the same time, just adding regulations to add regulations needs to be followed up with the leadership who can carry it out, who believes that that these things are important and who really knows and trusts their staff.
Let's go back to our callers. Fran is with us in Hazel Green. Fran, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us about, Fran?
Well, I just was in transit, but I pulled over because I heard the comment made about certified nursing assistants in Wisconsin that they are well paid. That is simply not true. I had to work 12 years in a full-time job in as a CNA and part-time in order to make ends meet. And the current wage that I left with when I retired now was under $15.
And how long ago, Fred, how long ago did you retire?
I just retired July of 2021.
Okay. Fran, thanks for that. And I wondered about that. Jennifer, I've heard we've done programs on CNAs not being paid very well. Is that starting to shift during COVID?
Yeah, I should have couched. Fran, I appreciate that. So I should have couched my comment to be they're better paid in the pandemic, but this is coming off of a low pay rate relative to other healthcare professionals and relative to the hard work that they do. So there have been incentives. There's been incentive pay, sometimes quite high on an hourly basis. And where my comment comes from is that we see students in our college cutting back to like part-time because they're getting paid well enough that it makes sense that they just work and make money as opposed to finishing their nursing degree as quickly. So it's really been a struggle with some of us because, you know, we have our nurses, our nursing students, they work full time, many of them. And it to make a little bit more money and to be able to have those extra shifts has been an incentive to have higher paychecks that then can delay their nursing education, which can worsen the shortage. So we're really trying to find solutions that keep our students moving forward in their classes.
Fran, thanks for calling in. Hillary joins us now in Milwaukee. Hillary, hello.
Hi.
Go ahead, Hillary.
So I'm a registered nurse. I've been a registered nurse for 2 years in a level one academic trauma center. I guess the two big things for me that I look at, the first one being I look at how residents are treated in our academic center. I see the educational opportunities that they're given. I see the respect that they're given and just the they're offered. And then I look at what the nurses are offered, and there's just a jarring difference in terms of sort of what the medical centers value. And the second thing just being it's just not complicated. You have to pay us more. When I see a hospital CEO, you know, it's public that they're making 100 times what we make. It just shows you we're not valued, and we want to feel like we're valued.
Hillary, thanks for the call. Undervalued, Jennifer Hillary says, both financially and in terms of respect.
She said it well.
Do you see the culture changing at all on the, I mean, the money thing is one thing, but on the respect side of things, are we seeing institutions give more of the respect Hillary is looking forward to nurses or no?
I think some places are doing better than others, and every place can do better. Nurses need to be at the table actually designing the change rather than just being the end user that has to implement the change. We see this at all levels, from designing hospital units to making decisions that, again, nurses have to carry out, but they're not at the table to create the change. And we need more nurses on boards. We need more nurses at the highest levels with our colleagues in greater numbers. Hillary, I can advocate for that.
Hillary, thanks for the call. Time for one more caller. Katie is with us in Sparta. Katie, hi.
Hi. I'm one of those nurses that recently retired. I did about a year ago. I just had it like the one person had said, enough is enough. I was at the top of my pay scale, no chance of any advancement. I got so tired of people saying, you need to. There was never any please or thank you or we appreciate what you do. They just kept adding on to the workload. And I just, at 63, I said, I'm done. I get my Social Security, a pension, whatever I've got tucked away. I'm done. I did give COVID vaccines for several months through the Wisconsin Emergency Assistance Volunteers. But once I could get my motorcycle out last year, I quit doing that too. I have no desire to ever nurse again.
Wow. Katie, thanks a lot. That, Jennifer, is worrisome.
It is. And this is what we're facing. It's a challenging environment, both for our new graduates to come out into and for our seasoned nurses to stay happy and healthy. And we have our work cut out for us, and we need to collaborate and make things better.
Katie, thanks for the call. And I guess enjoy motorcycle season again this year. In just our last less than a minute now, Jennifer, mission number one, what would be the one change you'd like to see as soon as possible to help with the nursing shortage problem?
Wow. Just one, huh?
Top of your list.
Yeah. We really need to enact better staffing models. I'm going to go back to that because nurses, they walk off the shift, like we've heard from the callers, with moral injury if they can't give the care that they know patients deserve. And your callers, you want your loved ones cared for by nurses that are themselves rested and happy and healthy. Nobody wants to be cared for by a burned out nurse, but burnout is the top issue right now. And, you know, before, like the report says, previous reports, 1 in 10 nurses were going to, we're looking to change jobs. Now it's 1 in 5 are looking to change jobs. Changing jobs will not necessarily fix the problem if the workplace and the environment itself is still harmful.
Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Jennifer Deering, Associate Dean for Academic Affairs at the UW-Milwaukee College of Nursing, with us today to look at Wisconsin's shortage of nurses and how to turn things around. You can still share your thoughts, your own experiences over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. On Food Friday last week, I talked to the author of The Secret Ingredient Cookbook about surprising special guest ingredients that make recipes better. You can still find a few of her recipes over at WPR.org/Food Friday. You shared some of yours on the air and some of you on the Ideas Network Facebook page. James writes his secret ingredient is everything bagel seasoning, the stuff they put on everything bagels. And by the way, the guest, the author of that cookbook used that in her soft pretzel knot recipe. David says some dishes benefit from a small amount of vinegar. David, I'll say some dishes, many dishes, but still, you know, little goes a long way. Scott says add 1 teaspoon of allspice in your meatloaf recipe. And Craig says adder's fork and blind worm's sting, lizard's leg and owlet's wing. Wait a minute. That last one sounds familiar. That's the witch's brew recipe from Macbeth. Maybe don't try that one at home, kids. There's nothing but trouble there. Double, double toil and trouble. This is Central Time.